And good evening and welcome to Tom Harris USA, episode number 69. This is Tom Harris in beautiful Chicago, Illinois. And we have a bit of snow coming down here at the moment, just kind of fluffy flakes of snow. It's been about a half an inch of snowfall since this afternoon. Don't have any idea exactly how much snow we're expecting. I tend not to pay attention to the Chicago weather forecasters. And I think I talked about this on a previous show, and it's because, generally speaking, they're wrong. The weather forecasters here in Chicago, I don't know what it is about them. They just can't seem to get it right consistently. And I think my part of it might be that the field office is somewhere out in the suburbs, and that doesn't really give you an accurate picture of how things are in the city. We have the lake effect here, so that's going to change things. And I've complained about this before, actually, and people in Chicago love to complain about the weather. I actually like snow, because if it's snowing, that means it's warmer than it could be. And we do have, especially here right on the lake, some bitter, bitter cold, and that's driven by the wind. And, you know, Chicago's called the Windy City, and you probably have all heard that. Now, the traditional explanation for that is not that we actually have a lot of wind in Chicago. Although we do, and I will say this is probably the windiest place that I've ever lived. But the reason why Chicago got the name Windy City was because of our politicians, who are full of hot air and giving lots of speeches. And that is very true of Chicago politicians, even now. So the more things change, the more things stay the same. And as far as work goes, things have been progressing apace. I'm pretty much fully adjusted to being back at work now. Now, one of the challenges that I've had this week is that I've taken on some new duties at work. And so, in addition to the job that I was already doing, I'm also doing most of what somebody else was doing. And in addition to that, I'm also training a new employee. In the middle of all this, of course, we have the end of 2009 business that we're all taking care of. As many people know, I do sort of accounting type work. I'm not an accountant, but I am a bookkeeper and deal with accounts payable and that sort of thing. So that is sort of what's going on. And we have the end of the year stuff going on. So things are in a tizzy. I've been working overtime most days, and that has left me less time to do things like play video games or do the podcast. Unfortunately, it also means that I'm behind on many of the podcasts that I listen to, because things have gotten so crazy at work that I sometimes can't even be bothered to download people's podcasts and listen to them. And indeed, when I'm training, I'm actually not even at my desk. But that doesn't mean I'm not interested. I am kind of trying to listen to them little by little, and eventually we'll get caught up on everybody. So before I get into the topic for today, I just wanted to read out this email. I have an email here from Leanne, and Leanne is a good friend of the show. I'm glad to hear from you. And she has this to say about episode number 68. Just wanted you to know that I appreciate the condensed Tom Harris descriptive edition. Well, thank you very much. I did think that it was about time that I do another one of those, because it had been a very long time. And especially for the new listeners who are coming in as the result of the show being on United Kingdom Radio. And I do hope that there's a few of them out there. I don't really know what the listenership is live to the United Kingdom radio shows. I know that when Chris Reardon is on, it's a fair number of people. I'm not sure what it is before, Chris's show comes on, so I'm not sure how many listeners that Yannick and Lee Last and myself have. But I do hope that there are at least a few, and I'm not really keeping track. Anyway, Leanne continues here. I'm not at a point in my life to easily sate any wanderlust that might pop up, so I always like the travel talk as well. Thanks for the show, Graham. Never sure to call it a programmer show. Joys from Leanne. Thanks, Leanne. I usually call it both a program and a show, depending on the context of the conversation. Usually when I mention I do a podcast, people ask what I do, and I say, well, I do a talk show. in the course of the program, I quite often say the program. So I guess it really, to me, it's either way. And I blame Joe Morris from American Talk USA for that, who I know that Leanne is good friends with. Yeah, I blame Joe for that because Joe has this inordinate fondness for the term program. And I guess it's just kind of rubbed off on me. So anyway, thanks for that, Joe, if you're out there listening. And incidentally, if you are out there listening, let's hear from you. It's been a long time since we've heard from you. We do miss hearing your voice, and it'd be nice to hear you, and especially on some of the live shows. It'd be a kick to have you calling in. Anyway, going back to Leanne's email, I think we all kind of feel the frustration sometimes of not having the freedom to travel. And especially me, because I've always had this sort of wanderlust, and I love traveling, and I've done a lot of traveling. I've traveled all around North America. I've traveled extensively in Europe, and I've been to Japan as well. And there's so many other places that I would really like to go. You know, last episode I talked a little bit about wanting to travel by container ship. But there's other places that I'd like to see as well. For example, I'd really like to see Australia and New Zealand. I'd really like to go to India. That's sort of high on my list. And yeah, so there's a lot of places that I'd like to see that I haven't. And as always, it's being tied down. You're being tied down by a job. You're being tied down by family. And yeah, I feel your pain. Really, yeah, I think maybe my days of being able to take 10 months off and go travel are behind me now, which would be unfortunate. Maybe if I win the lottery or something. Of course, I'd have to play the lottery to actually win it. If I were to become independently wealthy, then I'd probably do a whole heck of a lot more travel than I do now. But one of the reasons why I don't talk about travel as much on this show as maybe I could is because not everybody finds that interesting. And if somebody were to write me an email and saying, you know, Tom, what do you think of Paris? Or, you know, what places in Italy have you been? You know, I'm more than happy to talk about it because that's something that has come up in conversation. And it's something that a listener has asked. And Odin knows I could probably go on for, you know, show after show talking about places that I've traveled to. But as far as just kind of talking about it ad nauseum, I don't want to get kind of stuck in the rut of talking about travel so much that people don't find it interesting. And that's always the risk I run. And especially right after I came back from Europe in 97, where I'd been there for 8 months and I had so much to communicate. I was out of communication, out of touch with people for so long that I just had to kind of encapsulate this 8 months into a half hour conversation, and I really think that people got tired of hearing about me talk about it. So I do try to keep the travel talk to a minimum, unless it comes up in conversation. So anyway, thank you again, Leanne, for your email. I always like hearing from you. And in fact, I do like hearing from everybody. And if you want to get in contact with the show, that's very easy to do. The email address for the show is tom@tomharrisusa.com. And I know I do say this a lot, but I do love hearing from people and hearing other people's take on things. Because I think that if you just have one voice on the show, and let's face it, most of these shows, it's just my voice that you're hearing. Now that may change if and when I start doing a live show, but for now, that's basically it. And in that situation, it does tend to be sort of centered on that one person's opinion. And even if you have an opinion or an idea that's different from mine, I still do like hearing it. So please feel free. Don't be shy. So this does sort of go back to what Robert from Iceland was saying last time in the email that he sent. And I kind of talked about the first half of the email and I left the second half because I knew I was going to be coming back to it this episode. Because it's a topic that I've kind of wanted to talk about a little bit. And I'm not sure how much mileage there is in there, but, you know, hey, we'll find out. But Robert was talking about how, you know, he has a faith, and he doesn't try to press his faith on other people, and that he didn't think that I did either. And I think that Robert is right. I think in this case, this show, obviously, it's my show, so it really is kind of a forum for my opinions and my views. But that doesn't mean that I don't want to hear what other people have to say. And that's something I've talked about over and over again. Now, Robert brought something up in his email that I thought was a very interesting comment, and I think it's well worth talking about here, at least for a minute or two. And that is the idea of tolerance being a form of love. Now, of course, I am all for tolerance. I mean, I've talked about issues of tolerance on this program before. But I don't view tolerance as a form of love. I think that the tolerance is kind of a weak form of anything, to be honest, because tolerance isn't really acceptance. It's just tolerating something. It's not really embracing it. It's not accepting it. It is just sort of kind of letting it go and not pushing it. And I don't really see that as a form of love. What I would see more, and maybe this is what Robert meant, is that respect is a form of love. And I have a lot of respect for people who have a different opinion from me. And I give just, you know, one example is our good friend Joe Morris, who I mentioned a little bit earlier. Now, Joe and I are very, very different philosophically. I am a secular humanist, atheist, skeptic. He's an evangelical Christian. So the two of us actually have a world of difference between us philosophically. However, for everything that we have that's different, we have probably three or four things in common. We're both similar age. We both kind of grew up in the same generation, so we have similar cultural touchstones. You know, I used to listen to his show every single episode. He used to listen to my show every single episode. I hope he still does. I don't know. I'd certainly still be listening to his show if it were still on. And, you know, I can say honestly, I have a great fondness for Joe Morris as a person. And towards the end of his show, I actually did do a couple Skype conversations with him, and including an interview which has yet to appear. But, you know, I have to say, you know, Joe and I respect each other, and I think it's more than just tolerance. You know, I really have a fondness for Joe. Now, there's certain other people. Now, Chris Reardon and I, you know, Chris Reardon, by the way, this week is Chris Reardon's birthday, so everybody needs to sing happy birthday to Chris. His birthday is Friday, so people need to call Chris on his show or email him and let him know happy birthday. I don't know how old he is. All I know is that he is much, much older than I am. He's decades older than me. I think he's got to be at least 650,000 years old, and he's probably been talking for every single second of that time. Anyway, very happy birthday, Chris. Anyway, Chris and I also, you know, he is somebody with whom I have philosophical disagreements. Now, I don't think Chris and I have ever actually sat down and discussed our philosophical differences, because that's not the kind of personality Chris has. He's not somebody who's going to push his views on somebody else. Now, he may feel very strongly about one of my views, but he doesn't really say anything. Maybe that's just his own politeness or his reserve or whatever. But I do have to say, you know, I do feel that when I talk to Chris, I am speaking to a friend. I'm not speaking to somebody who can't stand me and everything I stand for. And that's kind of what I mean. So there's certainly an amount of love in the respect that people of differing opinions can hold. And that is basically the point of Plain Dudes Radio. This is a project that I'm involved with and was brought into that by Scott Mitchell from the Scott Podcast, who you've heard on the show before. And also Michael Moss is part of this, and Trucker Tom from the Trucker Tom Show, and Irk from the channel Irk Podcasts. So there actually, you know, is this whole podcast that's sort of dedicated to this idea of presenting different views as espoused by any number of different people, often from wildly contrasting backgrounds and viewpoints. Now, kind of on the same topic, the point of my show has never been to create converts. I'm not some sort of skeptical atheist evangelist. It is meant to make people think, and maybe to help people think more critically about the things they believe. Because one of the beliefs of a skeptic, and I kind of place myself pretty firmly in that category, is not to take anything by faith. And that is not to say that I, you know, just be a complete naysayer and doubt everything you hear. Now, if you've been listening for a long time, you've heard me talk about the echo chamber of faith and the echo chamber of doubt, which are really two different aspects of the same phenomenon. And I probably haven't come back to that idea for a while now. But I'll just kind of in a nutshell kind of sum that up for you. The idea of the echo chamber of faith is when you have sort of groups of like-minded people, and they kind of all repeat the same thing. And it comes to a point where everybody kind of has this same opinion. It's this sort of groupthink, which is another word for this phenomenon. So you have sort of this understanding within the small group, and not even necessarily a small group, because I think that things like commonly held misconceptions would even fall into the same category. Things like vitamin C being a good for a cold, or your echinacea being good for a cold, even though there's absolutely no scientific evidence that these things are true. And you know, these things become ingrained in the public consciousness. And this happens all the time. And the thing is, if you only talk to people who agree with you, if you only accept viewpoints that agree with you and reject everything else, you create what becomes this echo chamber of faith. And I've seen this over and over again. And most recently, I've seen this really extensively in the discussion of climate change, where you have this echo chamber of faith going on among the global warming skeptics. And so, of course, if you're a rational individual, you're asking yourself now, well, what's wrong with being a global warming skeptic? Well, the answer really is, there's nothing wrong with being a global warming skeptic, as long as you have some sort of scientific evidence on your side, and don't have this just become anti-global warming dogma. And that's what I see the movement has become. At least large sections of the movement have become this global warming denialism that has become a faith-based initiative. I mean, this really has gotten to the point where it's so dogmatic that any piece of evidence that is contrary to their opinion is immediately rejected. So it has become, in a lot of ways, this sort of sprawling conspiracy theory on the part of the deniers. And of course, like a lot of conspiracy theories, you have a lot of these various groups who are affiliated with this idea, this sort of global warming skepticism, we'll call it, where they're all kind of bouncing the same talking points off each other, and they're building this internally consistent argument. Now, it's internally consistent to them, but when you actually apply it against the available facts, it doesn't look so strong. But you take this out into the general public, and the ideas can resonate rather strongly. And this is effective because, essentially, people are lazy. They don't want to educate themselves. They don't want to do their own research. They're going to sort of accept the things that are spoon-fed to them by people who share their biases, who share their inclinations as to the way they already think. So conservative conspiracy theories are going to appeal more to a conservative mindset. A liberal conspiracy theory is going to appeal more to a liberal mindset. And that is sort of how this echo chamber of faith goes on. And I think that a good rule of thumb, and I think that this is probably the best advice that I could possibly give, this is going right back to critical thinking 101. And that is, you know, to ask the basic questions. When you hear somebody who is denying evolution, or you hear somebody who's denying global warming, the first thing you have to ask yourself is, who the hell are they? Who are they to make these statements? You know, what are their qualifications? For example, right now in this country, we have this inexplicable movement that is anti-vaccination. People are blaming the vaccinations that we receive when we're young as sort of a boogeyman that causes all sorts of horrible problems. Now, you know, study after study has been done as the result of these accusations and saying, okay, well, we think that this vaccine leads to autism. And so they've done these studies, some of which have gone on for, you know, longer than 10 years. And the science has shown that there's no merit to this claim, that there's statistically there's no correlation between the vaccines and autism. And, you know, that is the established science. This is what has been shown to be true. However, you have this anti-vaccination movement going in this country, and it's a dangerous movement because, you know, vaccinations actually do prevent a lot of these terrible diseases that killed our ancestors from running rampant in the population now, things like smallpox and rubella. Polio. My grandfather had polio, and he had a bad leg for life as a result of this. So, you know, this is not a minor disease. To say that all vaccines are harmful is pretty extreme stuff. even assuming that some are, which has not yet been proven, still the idea of withholding vaccinations from people is still kind of a dangerous idea. But look at the leaders of the anti-vax movement and who they are. And you're going to find that there's very few of these people who've actually done any science of their own. These groups that they set up are nothing more than political advocacy groups that have nothing to do with science at all. And that's just as true of the climate skeptics. It's just as true of the people who deny evolution. It's also true of, you know, some of the leftist wackos as well. When you talk about the 9/11 truthers, they think that the U.S. government under George W. Bush planned and carried out the 9/11 attacks. The facts don't support their view either. And so that is a large part of my point here, is that, you know, if you're going to think critically, the first thing that you need to ask yourself when you hear something like this is, what is the basis of this argument? How do they know this stuff? Part of the appeal of these conspiracy theories, of course, is that they can claim to have secret knowledge that the government or whoever else, usually it's the government or the church or whoever, is trying to keep from you, and they know it. So they're trying to do good in the world by exposing this web of deceit and, you know, freeing the world from this communist dictatorship, which is going to come as the result of Al Gore taking away your SUVs. And I'm not kidding, folks. These claims that they make and stuff like that, it's just as silly as just what I just said. Maybe not exactly the same, but pretty darn close in a lot of cases. And it's really where, you know, you could go to any of these websites and have a look yourself. I mean, you don't take my word for it. For God's sakes, who am I? You know, and I've said this on the show before. I don't even want you to take my word for it. I think you should go to these websites and look at it yourself. You would think, now, maybe I'm crazy, maybe I'm not, but wouldn't you think that if this idea of global warming was a hoax, that they would be able to produce data that would support the idea that that was a hoax? They're making a hypothesis here. Why are we not seeing this hypothesis being tested? The collection of data. Why are we not seeing science being done? Why are we just seeing just personal attacks launched against climate scientists and not actually seeing people doing climate science to disprove it? And by the way, just criticizing somebody else's methods and somebody else's data is not doing science. That's just criticizing. In order to actually disprove science, you actually have to do science. If it's such a hoax, if it's so flimsy, then why aren't they just out there disproving it right now? The fact of the matter is they're not. And the fact of the matter is they can't, because they're not actually scientists who do science. And it's the same with the creationists. They've never done a lick of science in their life. Their whole idea of how to disprove evolution is to criticize little bits of it, little bits of evolution that they think don't make sense. And a lot of times they don't even understand the little bits that they're trying to criticize. And then after they've made a few of these claims, they say, well, obviously evolution is a theory in crisis, and they rattle off, you know, the few criticisms that they've made and say, look at all these hits that it's taking. Surely it's collapsing now. But these assertions are really just based on wishful thinking. You know, they can make as many criticisms as they want of evolution or whatever the cause you're trying to promote is. But unless you're actually able to provide something real, then what you're doing is you're just spouting hot air. It's really nothing more than your opinion. And as I've said on the show, there's nothing wrong with having opinions. I think we all have opinions. I do, certainly, and I'm certainly not shy about talking about them. And I don't think that you should be shy about talking about your opinion, even on my show. I think that people out there should write in and talk about their opinions. But if you're going to have an opinion about something, and especially if you're going to have a very strong view on something, I think it would behoove you to become educated on that topic and to think about things logically. Ask the basic questions. Who, what, when, where, why? Consider the source of your information. If you're, for example, spouting off on a scientific topic like global warming or evolution, what does the person who you're listening to know about this topic? What kind of qualifications do they have? Are they speaking from a place of authority? Or are they speaking from a place of ignorance? Is it political spin or is it real knowledge? And I think that those are things that we need to look at when we're formulating our opinions. Don't be swept along in the tide of people who aren't thinking. There's a lot of sheep out there who are just going to follow whatever view out there most closely agrees with their own personal biases. Don't be a sheep. You know, just don't repeat something that you heard on Rush Limbaugh or something that you heard on, you know, MSNBC. It actually behooves you to become educated, and to that end, to read books, to actually do research of your own, gain an understanding of the world around you and not be led around by other people, to actually become educated as to whatever issue that you're passionate about. Because there's nothing wrong with passion, folks. There's nothing wrong about feeling strongly about something. And as long as that we're able to treat each other with respect, we can agree to disagree about things and not push that on other people. And this is the respect that I think Robert was talking about in his email. And I feel much the same way. We see, at least in this country, this extremely polarized political atmosphere where people are seeing things strictly in black and white. Either you're for us or against us. It's a rather binary sort of opinionated system that we have going right now in this country. And a lot of us are more geared towards seeing things in a more nuanced way, seeing things in full color rather than in just black and white. And I think that this sort of polarized system is something that we really need to get away from. And that won't be easy in this environment because we have an opposition party in this country who has decided that at all costs they're going to oppose everything that this administration tries to do. At that point, they have lost the argument. They can't win on the issues, so they're going to try to win on obstructionism and to try to paralyze the government and try to keep things from working in the hope that that will lead to a short-term political gain. That's not agreeing to disagree. And I think that we need to get to a point where we can agree to disagree and try to work together on things that we can agree on, however small these things are. And I do think that we should endeavor to disagree with each other respectfully. And I don't really see a lot of that happening in this country right now. You can talk about, you know, other people fudging evidence all you want, but that doesn't prove your case. Attacking established science doesn't invalidate established science. The only thing that can invalidate science is scientific research. So I think that that's, you know, there's a difference between trying to appeal to a popular mindset and actually trying to convince people based on a logical argument. Maybe the problem, going back to something we were talking about before, is the fact that some of the opinions that are being bumped up against each other in these political arguments are not based in the facts. Maybe they're based purely in emotion. There's an old saying that I'd like to bring up at this point, and that is, people are entitled to their own opinions, but they're not entitled to their own facts. And I do see that a lot of the obstructionism that's going on in our government right now is the result of people who think that they are entitled to their own facts. And now we've gone into a completely different kind of argument. Because you're not disagreeing on a set of facts. You don't have opinions based on a set of facts. You have one side which is trying to govern in the middle and trying to include opinions from the right, and then you have the right wing who've created their entire mythology that is so far removed from reality that they are not willing to accommodate any dissent. And that's a very, very frustrating position to be in politically and for this country, because it's only going to hurt the country in the long run. And we need to really, I think, wake people up and point this out to them. Because the only way that we're going to be able to stop the obstruction is by kicking them out of office. And I guess that's really kind of the bottom line. Anyhow, I've kind of gotten off the subject and I'm running out of time. So thanks for listening once again. Again, the email address if you'd like to contribute to the program is tom@tomharrisusa.com. So from beautiful Chicago, Illinois, this is Tom Harris signing off. We'll see you next time.